So I wanted to talk to you about, here we go, so integrated partner services, and just go through briefly our objectives. You know, the title of this session is about emerging into adulthood, and I think that when I came to this presentation, my thought was that maybe we're still in the childhood years, and so there is some background on Pixie, which I think is helpful to make sure that we're all on the same page. Also, again, describing the different models of partner services and listing the benefits of using a Pixie strategy to improve program effectiveness. So I'm not only going to provide background on Pixie, I'll also be providing some background on partner services and then, of course, the work that we did with this for this presentation. But before I do that, I wanted to just kind of provide this overarching goal that we have within our center on that says that our center will support and promote a syndemic approach to prevention by promoting better collaboration between programs and supporting appropriate service integration at the point of access. So obviously, not every disease has to be accounted for in each program, but making it appropriate for what you're doing. And we want to look broadly across our programs and work with our partners to discover new and innovative ways to collaborate and use resources wisely and efficiently and take advantage of multiple disciplines and shared knowledge. And so we're really excited to see what's going out in the field. And that was one of the reasons we decided to look at partner services because the programs out in the field have varying levels of kind of Pixie attributes, and as we go on, I'll be talking about various models and how they fit into Pixie. I think most of you in the room are familiar with partner services, but I just always think it's good for us to be on the same page here. So we're really talking about an array of services that should be offered to persons with HIV infection, syphilis, gonorrhea, and chlamydia, and of course their partners. And here we're talking about partner notification, testing, and other activities that may increase the availability of treatment and for those who need linkage to care. And our goals with partner services then are to, you know, result in positive behavior change, reduce infectiousness of HIV and STDs, decrease STD and HIV transmission, and reduce incidence and achieve improved public health. And I think this is really important as we think about the transforming landscape for, you know, the Affordable Care Act and how services are going to move forward in the future. Now, as I said, this work was done out of the Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention, and you may know that CDC currently funds 68 state, territorial, and city health departments to conduct HIV prevention activities. And these prevention activities are things such as HIV testing, prevention interventions, linkage to care, and partner services. And when these health departments are receiving funds, they must provide data about their prevention activities to the Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention. The program evaluation branch then in that division defines the requirements, and these requirements are really based on what is important to know as we monitor and evaluate HIV prevention program activities. And so we work with grantees to ensure that they're able to report the required data to CDC. And the data that I'm going to be presenting here were, they came from work that was conducted with actually 54 of 59 funded jurisdictions at the time. So you see that we're expanding our funding a bit. So we conducted some, the Division of Program Evaluation, I'm sorry, the Program Evaluation Branch in the Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention conducted data crosswalks with health departments to review current data requirements. So when we set out requirements, we specify them pretty in depth, and we need to make sure that the data that's coming in is the data that we're requiring, and if it's not, what's that going to mean for monitoring programs and how we evaluate them? And so we conducted these conference calls with HIV and STD partner services staff. We really felt it was important that even though we're working with our HIV grantees, that HIV and STD program staff come together specifically when we're talking about partner services. And these were two-hour calls. There was there were pretty in-depth discussions. And what we asked them for about 30 minutes during that call was to really describe to us how their program worked for partner services, identify which program was responsible for conducting partner services in their jurisdiction, and just really walk us through it. Many programs have different ways of structuring their programs. They carry out their programs in different ways. And we wanted to get a good understanding of how this works. So we asked them, how do you identify your index patients? Who offers the partner services? How is data collected? And where is it stored? And all these things that really make an impact on how your programs operate. So the two main questions that address today's presentation that we asked were, who conducts partner services activities in your jurisdiction? Is it the HIV program staff? Is it the STD program staff? Is it some combination? And how are the data collected and when? And both the answers to both these questions feed into our results here. So the program descriptions revealed different methods to deliver partner services, which was no surprise. A lot of programs mentioned that they were integrated at the client level. So integrated HIV partner services happened and were delivered at the client level. Some stated that partner services was provided either by the HIV or the STD program. The community-based organizations and health department partnerships were described. There were fewer of them than we expected. We know that some community organizations are involved in offering partner services, but a lot of times they're really limited to identifying folks that are in need of these services. And then less frequently, there was mention of private sector involvement. And, again, I think as we move forward with the changing landscape with ACA, it'll be interesting to see how this transforms over time. So we'll be watching that. But, I'm going to focus in the next slide on really these integrated programs and then HIV partner services that's provided either by the STD program or the HIV program, because that was really where the meat of the response lied. So you'll see that two-thirds of our programs identify themselves as an integrated program. And this was usually an integrated program in which the HIV and STD activities are fully combined under one program heading and offered in an integrated fashion. So it's hard to describe all the variations, and I think you're hearing some variations in programs here today. But some mentioned that they were under the same division. Some mentioned that they had, an HIV-STD bureau. But there were most folks were really talking about their programs as being integrated. In some areas, HIV was still the primary responsibility. Their program was still primarily responsible for providing HIV partner services. And in this case, at times, STD folks would work on co-infection. But generally, what was happening is that the HIV program was identifying their cases through testing or surveillance activities and then working the case. With STD primarily being responsible, here HIV may be providing some funding, but the activity was really being carried out by the STD program. And a lot of times, these folks were really identified through co-infection. So if someone was identified with syphilis and HIV, that's when that HIV case was being worked. And I have to say that this has been a shift. We've often heard that, that the programs were quite separate and things were happening, in their own ways. And I think perhaps with the guidelines that came out a few years ago and so forth, and just the shift that people are trying to really look holistically at their clients more and more, we're seeing more of this integration. And so then lastly, we had some health departments that we couldn't really fit in a nice box, right? So here, some programs would say that both programs offer partner services, although their programs weren't integrated. Or in some areas, maybe a city would have an integrated activity, but the rest of the state was operating very separately. So what's the impact then here? We really think that the integration of the programs has potential to offer several benefits. When programs are truly integrated, the training for the DIS can become truly integrated. And I think that that really helps people feel comfortable offering HIV services when they've been traditionally offering STD services and so forth. But it also benefits people out in the field for, you know, receiving one health department contact, whether they're an index client or a partner. And then receiving that consistent messaging about prevention, treatment, and care so that there's really no confusion when they're getting those services. I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about data sharing when I talk about integration. And as you may know, in January, we launched the data security and confidentiality guidelines. And if the slides here will be online, so you can use this link to find it if you haven't looked at it already. But it outlines the requirements and benefits of data sharing for our center programs, including early case detection and accurate and timely reporting of diseases, enhanced quality of surveillance data across programs, and trying to, you know, work that activity together, be more integrated, improving documentation and reporting of comorbidities, and leading to better patient management and partner services. And there's a number of other requirements and benefits that are highlighted in these guidelines, which I really encourage you to take a look at. I think they really did a great job with these. And it's important to note that these replace all our disease-specific guidelines that we've had in the past. So there's a really nice example of data sharing, the benefits of data sharing for partner services. And I just kind of wanted to walk you through this here. It's in the back of the guidelines. So when, you know, a case is reported to HIV surveillance in, I'm sorry, when a lab report comes into HIV surveillance, a case is reviewed in EHRs, and, you know, oftentimes there's missing information. Lab reporting is often incomplete. And so, you know, when cases are sent out to the state health departments so that they can be worked for partner services, and there can be a request that information be completed and provide more information. And so the state health department kind of assign that case and then, you know, send it to the local health department for initiating the field record. And when the field record review is conducted and the partner services offered, and obviously that would be for HIV and STD, testing, treatment as needed, care as needed, then more of that information that's missing that helps HIV surveillance can also be collected as well. And what I hated is that in this template, I couldn't get an arrow that went back to surveillance, right? So really, we believe that bi-directional data sharing is just so important. It improves the partner services program, it improves the HIV surveillance program, and I think it has the potential to really break down some of those barriers that have really been set up a lot by HIV surveillance, but I think by other programs as well, as to, you know, kind of holding on to their data, and we see the benefits when that data is shared. And I just, you know, I thought it was great that Kevin Cranston was talking about programs like MAVEN, where you can bring all that data together and have a more comprehensive look of what that really means for you, the folks you're serving. So what does this mean? Well, we really took the time to talk to programs and ask more about their partner services programs because we felt that when we get that data in the Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention, we need to know what that means for the programs. We need to have a better understanding of how the programs are working in order to monitor and evaluate those programs. So the HIV grantees will be submitting the required data for HIV partner services this spring. And as the data come in, then the CDC staff in that division will be working with grantees on quality assurance and conducting analyses. And they don't have to go back to programs and say, well, what does this all mean? How does your program work? They have a better understanding of it. It's a little more holistic, both at the CDC and the health department level. It's also really important for our communications. I know in the past there have been kind of communications from the Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention, communications from the Division of STD Prevention about partner services, and it really should be joined, and I think we're learning some lessons on that. I'm going to skip this slide just to talk more about the implications of policy, program policy and research. You know, we really feel that the extent to which a state or local program can integrate HIV and partner service, HIV and STD partner services may substantially influence the success of the services delivered and thus improve the program effectiveness and meet the goals of the PICSE strategy. What I don't think I've been as clear about until now is that we We're not stressing that program collaboration or program integration has to take place. We want to see program collaboration so that service integration take place, because that's, we really feel that when a client walks in the door and needs services, they should get everything that they need rather than going to different places to get similar pieces. So here's my contact information, and I think I might have time for a question or two. No, that's an excellent question. So I think it's kind of a combination of things. You know, looking at health department programs, they are getting less dollars these days, and there's less resources at the CDC level. And so really, you know, combining efforts, and but also this recognition that clients are coming to us as a client. They're not coming to us as a disease, and they don't just have one need or one issue that needs to be focused on. It's a similar reason for moving towards sexual health as a framework, right? So I think that these two recognitions really came together to say we need to be doing a better job of addressing the needs of people who are at highest risk often. You know, those folks are often the ones with the comorbid infections, and really set up our programs in a way that we can meet those needs, not by shuffling them around and not by shuffling our dollars around for, well, if you have HIV needs here and you have STD needs here, but what do we do when you have both? And that's quite frequent. I think our data systems and our funding streams and so forth have been set up really siloed in the past. And so we have to kind of backpedal and say, all right, we've done all of this to create these walls. We want to take them down. And so we're really making it an initiative. We're making it a goal within our center to try to combat some of that. And it's not just with PCSE, again, it's with health disparities, it's with sexual health, trying to be more comprehensive of the needs that people have.